That's just a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
Are you going to be partaking in our open house on this weekend?
Yeah, on Saturday. I'll be there from 1 to 4.
From 1 to 4?
1 to 4 here at Walk Radio.
And so what's going to be happening?
You'll be able to meet the team here. We'll have food. We'll have some guests. I'm not sure exactly who's all going to be there, but it's going to be a pretty good time, pretty fun time.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be here on Sunday. Oh, I forgot. It's Friday, and there's somebody sitting across from me.
Yeah, who's this person? Or,
who dad? Who dad?
Hey, it's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, what's going on, man?
Well, I didn't know about this open house.
Hey, come out and hang out and let the people get a chance to meet Sandy Williams. Stop out on Sunday. And I don't even know what time I'm scheduled. I think it's 10 o'clock or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can come out and meet Sandy Williams if he dares come out and really say hello. So we'll be here. I'll be here. At least I'm not going to, try to get Sandy to. I don't know what his schedule is like, but we're going to be here a few hours and. You guys can get a chance to meet us. Just when you bring that baseball bat, we're going to have security at the door. And so no bringing baseball bats or any of those things.
Yeah, but Rotten Tomatoes, you don't have to get quite as close. And you'll be in range.
So anyway, Sandy, the Green Bay Packers are in London. They're going to play a football game that starts at 8 o'clock a.m. Sunday.
Well, 8 o'clock a.m. our time.
I know. 8 o'clock a.m.
That's 2 in the afternoon in London, I believe.
Yeah, 8 o'clock a.m. is the time the Packer game starts. And in a way that's kind of good.
It's pretty convenient. You can get the Packers out of the way early on Sunday. You still got a lot of sunlight hours left. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, and I'll be able to watch most of the game before I even come here. So, Sandy, I will say this to you. The ticket sold out for Green Bay Packer fans, and that stadium sold out. Now, I know... life is hard for some, but not for all.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can say, I'm going and spend 4 days in London and just to party and to, hang out with the Green Bay Packer fans. This increase in the gas prices is not impactful on everybody.
Well, no. In fact, what's pretty clear is that there's a whole bunch of people in America who have wealth and are experiencing prosperity that don't. There are several Americas. There are at least two Americas, and one of those Americas is going to do just fine, even with a recession. And so we're on the front edge of a recession. There's inflating prices, and some people are feeling the pinch and certainly couldn't think about going to London to watch a football game. Other people are getting on charter jets and starting a six-day party in the British Isles.
You and I were talking off the air at the beginning of this, and I was saying, hey, the gasoline is up to $4.19 a gallon for regular. And just yesterday it was $3.99, and a little over a week ago I was marveling at it being $3.39.
I would tell you that the commodity market is a little bit like getting a stir.
Is that volatile?
Well, yes, very volatile. And when the sun goes down at night, we could all decide that the sun is disappearing and it'll never come back, and we're going to live a life of darkness, except we all know it'll get a rise in the morning. And commodity prices are a little bit like that. They're very reactive. There's been news in the last 3 weeks that would suggest that the price of gas will go up, oil will go up. It does go up. It responds. The spot price responds very, very quickly to things like OPEC's decision to reduce production. And there also are other pressures out there. The increase in the demand for gasoline that came after the summer when there was sort of a disappointing demand. I mean, there's lots of factors. But it looks like, number one, the price of gas will go up for a while. And number two, the government's going to release more of its emergency portfolio, a reserve inventory of oil. That's going to have a depressing effect on the price. Winter will have a depressing effect on gasoline demand, but will there be... So, you know, there's all kinds of factors. But let me just guarantee you, the price of gasoline will go up and down.
Yeah, but Sandy, I don't think we were expecting a 60-cent rise inside of 5 days. I mean, that's a monumental rise.
Well, we had a 50 or 60 cent reduction in a month.
Yep, I'm to my one.
Well, prices go up much faster than they come down, and they went up faster than they came down. And there's definitely a trend line on the price of oil and gas. Over the years, the trend line has been for it to go up. But if you measure it against inflation, you know, the price of gasoline, just based on inflation, should be 10% higher this year than it was last year. And there's other factors affecting it.
So Biden goes and talks to the Crown Prince, and he says, hey, bud, I need you to, you know, things are a little tight on us, and so we need you to do us a favor, right?
Yeah.
Do me a favor, you know. We need you to see things our way. The American people, we're hurting right now. So do us a favor and increase production. And the Crown Prince gave him the middle finger.
No, he didn't, actually. The Crown Prince said that he would increase production and increased it 750,000 gallons for 2 months in a row. And then, because the price of oil began to look like it was going to go below $80 a barrel, apparently Saudi Arabia, being so dependent on the sale of oil, thinks that a price below $80 threatens their homeland economy and the security of the throne, because the security of the throne is dependent on providing a great deal of wealth to the country of the Saudi Arabia through oil. So, you know, what really happened, I think, is that the self-interest of Saudi Arabia overwhelmed any notion they had of doing us a favor. Furthermore, you know, we seem to be upset about prices of oil and gas and the increase in them that is far less than the increase being experienced in Europe, okay? So, you know, I think the American people, to the extent that we want Europe to cooperate in these sanctions against Russia, have to understand that we're going to have to share the pain. And some of that sharing of the pain relates to the world price of oil. You know, Saudi Arabia stuck to its own interest. Also, you have to understand that the OPEC countries, which include Russia, and OPEC too, and Russia is one of the biggest, it's not the biggest reserve of oil. It's maybe fourth or fifth or sixth, but it's one of the biggest producers of oil right now.
So Joe Biden said to them, okay, that's the way you want to play it. We're the ones protecting your oil fields. We're the ones militarily make it possible for you to do what you do. Have you forgotten that?
Well, let me just say that I heard Blinken on the radio this morning, and Blinken's talking about how the security interest of the United States includes having Saudi Arabia having military security, which means we will sell them military hardware so they can be sure of it. So, well, you know, selling the military hardware isn't altogether a hardship for the United States. They're a big customer of military hardware from the military-industrial kind of complex in the United States. Furthermore, who are we worried about taking the oil fields away from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is probably the most powerful military, other than Israel, which has been mightily armed by us as well. Saudi Arabia has plenty of military power. Who do we think is on the verge of invading Saudi Arabia such that they need all this defense? I mean, is it Iran? Maybe. But that's about the only potential danger on the horizon that exists. So, you know, I think we speak out of both sides of our mouth, quite frankly.
So let me ask you, Sandy, because prior to what took place in Libya, I don't know, 15 years ago, whatever it was, 10 years ago, Libya had and still has the best crude oil anywhere in the world. What happened with the
Gaddafi?
No, not Gaddafi. I know what happened in Libya. The guy who what's the name of the nation that really was got overthrown? Great oil power 15 years ago or so, and the head of that nation died. He was an enemy to us.
You're talking about Gaddafi in Libya.
Libya, but the other nation. There's another one that was one of the most powerful oil.
Qatar?
No.
It's one. Oh, you're talking about Iraq?
No.
Well, what the hell here? This is like 20 questions.
It's
just bigger than us, bigger than a bread box.
When we come back from the break, I'll tell you who it is. But you'll say, oh, well, yeah. But they clearly had great oil reserves and were doing great with oil. Now their nation is in disarray. The oil is still there. And I'm wondering who's mining all of that oil. Same thing with Libya again.
Yeah.
What happened to that oil and those oil reserves? Who's mining that? You would think that since we were kind of involved
Well, incidentally, there was news a couple of days ago. We're meeting with Venezuela.
Venezuela.
Is that who you were talking
about? Yeah, Venezuela.
Okay, well, we're meeting with Venezuela. Yeah. We're lifting the sanctions on Venezuela based on their authoritarian regime. We're being told by our government that Venezuela is talking about negotiating to have fair elections
Hugo
as a way
Chavez.
Of...
Not,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, we're on the right continent now, and we got the right country. Yes.
But my point is, those were oil.
Well, Venezuela, we're talking about now negotiating to let Chevron back into Venezuela. Venezuela is going to let Chevron pump it. It'll be released into the market. It's going to take a year or two.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Right. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And you know, you're waking up and you're seeing and continue to see the gas prices rise. And
wake up in the morning with gas.
You know, and
gas problems,
and you know, if you're not one of the people who can afford to fly to London to watch the Green Bay Packers for 4 days, and you're one of those people who watch the gas prices continue to go up, and you say, "Wow, man, how am I gonna navigate this?" You know, I got a beater, and the beater just sucks up all. I'm trying to make it through, but this continues to impact and affect our lives. And I was asking Sandy during the break about, you know, major oil producers 20 years ago, Libya, and Venezuela. And they were major players in the market. Their oil didn't dry up. Their oil reserves are still there. And I was really asking Sandy, you know, why we were not able to, you know, take advantage of that, because those nations, you know, their leaders, Gaddafi and Chavez, nationalized the oil, meaning, hey, this is our oil. It's on our land, and our people should benefit by it. And that's not always what our nation has agreed. And so because our nation has not always agreed with that, you know, those nations basically have been, you know, turned inside out and upside down. And the oil that's still under their land is not been, you know, utilize.
Well, it's not, yeah. I mean, Venezuela sits on huge reserves, maybe the largest in the world. And, you know, like I said, we've suddenly decided over these past months, you know, Biden has traveled to Saudi Arabia to have conversations there and to try and make sort of a kumbaya arrangement there to have more cooperation in terms of supply of oil out of Saudi Arabia. Now we're starting negotiations with Venezuela. We've treated them like a pariah. And talked about how their government is repressive, et cetera. And it seems like our interest in governments and our decision about whether they are unacceptably repressive or not has everything to do with the extent to which, to the extent they sit on oil, the extent to which they cooperate with us in how they make use of that oil. So that Saudi Arabia, a very repressive country, doesn't get a lot of discussion on our part in terms of them turning them into a pariah. We finally decided we had to do something in that regard when it became clear that they killed and cut up and into pieces, the Khashoggi, the new journalist, and so then we had to do something about that. But apparently, we're over that problem now. And with respect to Venezuela, we decided that they had a very repressive regime, and we had to basically boycott in the world market their oil and try and isolate them and ruin their economy, which we pretty much succeeded in doing. And so now. Now we're going to make nice, and we're going to lift sanctions, and we're going to talk to them because they're going to let Chevron back in to pump oil. And so, you know, our interest in oil, the natural resource oil, seems to have a very significant impact on our foreign affairs and our foreign policy. And we and the American people ought to at least take note of that. You know, is oil really the strategic interest about which we ought to spend great national treasure and our military and bend our military might with respect to?
You know, Sandy, the fact, so as I listen to conservative responses to all of this, their thing is, well, if we just pump our own oil, you know, we're not pumping enough oil.
Well, those conservatives are ignoring the reality, the financial reality associated with the American oil companies and their willingness to invest in American resources in terms of additional wells and all of the resources necessary to build the pipelines and the infrastructure necessary to support new
refineries.
New wells and new refineries. And quite frankly, the American investing public, the financial markets of America have basically been telling the oil companies that they aren't willing to make investments in the oil companies or to reward the stock value of the oil companies if what they continue to do is to sink money into the kind of investments in American oil exploration and development. And the reason being that they don't trust the long-term price of oil in the world, in a world which is moving away from oil. So the financial markets are telling these oil companies to diversify. So whether conservatives want to point at some action by the federal government, there's much more to do with the supply of oil that has to do with general financial trends and general world trends.
You know, you know, that answer, Sandy, is pretty involved. And so unless you're an economist or, you know, like you and others, I mean, it's easy to say, hey, just pump it, right? you know, why won't they just do it? It's there. We know it's there. And if we just pumped our own oil, but you just said the financial markets.
Our refineries are at about their capacity. When refineries at capacity, that defines how much gasoline we can put out to the marketplace, regardless of how much of oil comes out of the ground. So the question is, are there people out there willing to invest in additional refining capacity to materially increase the supply of gasoline above what it was in 2019 or above what it is now? And the fact is that there isn't that money on the horizon.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Tom, I see you. We'll get you on the other side. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Come on, stand right back. Ingram Show. And as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And you know, Sandy, I don't know why I say, I don't know what that verbiage is. But,
Oh, you just did it again, Earl.
I know. I don't know where that comes from. But anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show.
It's just a punctuation mark, a verbal punctuation mark.
Well, whenever you hear me say it, kind of correct me, all right?
I'm just going to come in every time you say it. Oh, Earl, is that it?
It's a habit. But, I can't stop doing it.
Here we go now. Now
it's a habit. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Maybe we can change it. Go ahead, Tom. And do I do it that much? I must do it every other second. I just realized it. Go ahead.
Yeah, first off, we the people are the government, and we must never forget this.
Tom says that as much as you say,
There you go. There you go, Sandy. That way you know who I am, Sandy.
I know.
You can remind the people.
I'm for you.
We can remind the people out there that we're the government.
He did it. Tom just did it.
I just said
Yeah.
I think that's a common type of word people will use as they are.
Here we go.
So anyway, what I would like to say is that the oil, crude oil, there I did it again. See, now you got me flustered here.
It affects everyone.
Crude oil is down in prices. The oil companies are taking advantage of the American people. That's what's going on. We have an election coming up. The big business would love it because of the fact that it'll affect the election results. And we need to think about that. And I hope that we start segueing a little bit, I'm just asking, into Ron Johnson's record. Because we got a huge debate tonight. I do believe it's going to be a blue wave. I do believe that it's going to be something where we are going to win this election by a lot. But I think we need to start showing Ron Johnson's record every day, just like you did on Tuesday and Wednesday, I think it was, Earl, because of the fact that the bottom line is this is all that really matters right now between our democracy and dictatorship or fascism. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And, you know, getting back to the topic about the oil prices, crude oil is at a record low. But yet, profits for the oil companies are at a record high. Now, you tell me what the heck is going on here. Because from what I can see, that's exactly what's happening is we are getting screwed over by the oil companies. And we need to show that by voting.
Well, Tom, that's right, Tom. You're in California. Gas is $6 plus a gallon.
Absolutely it is. But you know what? It's rose in the last week, and that's why our governor, Gavin Newsom, is actually going to put a record or going to put a windfall profit tax on the oil companies because of the fact that they are screwing over we the people. And that's the bottom line. And it's right before this election. But what I would like to say is that everyone needs to go to soulstothepolls.wi.org and get people out to vote. Get people to the polls. Start voting now. My two sisters from Wisconsin yesterday already voted. Take advantage of the vote by mail.
Hey, Tom.
Vote now.
Hey, Tom, let's let Sandy respond to your
crude oil, Mandela.
The crude oil price.
Well, I don't. Crude oil is not at an all-time low. Crude oil.
The prices are down. I should say the prices are down. Yeah. Yet the gas prices are up.
Well, the price of crude has recently gone up. Look, these prices of these commodities are volatile, but there's no question that the retail sale of gasoline prices are quick to reflect increases in the spot market price of oil and very slow to reflect the decreases in the price, and that has been the history over a long period of time. There is also no question that OPEC and other people are affirmatively doing things to try and impact the price of oil in a manner which, as you say, might be related to political interests in the United States, as well as other things, as well as the Ukrainian war, the situation in Europe, etc. So, and Russia is obviously is one of the largest producers of oil in the world, and so it is in a position to have an impact. And because it's such a large producer, Saudi Arabia and others that are concerned about the price of oil play nice with Russia because they want Russia to cooperate in the world market in their effort to control the price of oil. But
Sandy, you have one of the most treasonous radical Russian Ron Johnson, who was over in Russia on July 4th, 2018. And who knows what it is if they came back and got rich off of that little trip and what it is that actually happened on that trip. All I know is that Russian radical Ron, Russian Ron, is basically getting a free pass, and we need to be telling every day about how our democracy is going to be gone, Social Security is going to be gone, Medicare is going to be gone. We need Mandela Barnes because he is the 51st vote that's going to be able to overturn the filibuster and actually get some things done like FDR did, like Eisenhower did, like Teddy Roosevelt did. That's what we need to do.
Hey, Tom,
and we need to win this election, period.
That's a great commercial, Tom. Thank you very much for the call. All right, got to go. So Sandy, again, this whole...
Well, there is. Let me just pile on a little bit with Tom, without going into all of the questions about Russian Ron and the rest of it. There's no question that this election is a very important election, and there's also no question that America is sitting on the brink of potential dynamite in terms of what could happen within our country. There was an article in the New York Times yesterday morning, which seemed to be filled with kind of interesting news, but you know, there are entities that keep track of words that are used in the social media, so that this is something that a computer can easily run through. Google and others have access to everything that's in public social media, and so they measure the frequency of the use of some words. And the word civil war in the United States has been used with great frequency, and in particular frequency recently, and it's been used with greater frequency in response to various situations that happen in the country. Like Biden gives his speech with respect to the risk to democracy, and immediately there's lots of talk of civil war in the social media. So, you know, and some of that talk is allegorical, but some of that talk seems to be much more serious about actual risks of civil not just civil disobedience, but dangerous conduct. And so, you know, our country is very fragile. We have a very fragile situation, and I think we need to be careful to elect people who are going to promote something much closer to a steady and reliable form of government than something that's going to breed dissension. And I think that Ron Johnson's version of republicanism has been something that has been very fraught with a tendency to breed dissension. Someone who consistently supports the notion that the election was stolen. Someone who with innuendo constantly backs sort of the Trumpian view of the need to attack the American norms. That's a dangerous form of politics.
You know, we are in a... I was reading this the other day. I forget where I was reading it, but this is as dangerous a time inside of our borders that we've had in a long, long time. I mean, you and I have talked about this, trying to understand one another, the one side and the other side. And there just doesn't appear to be a will to get beyond this divide.
I think we lack the value, the sort of social value that would be necessary to decide that we need to exercise sort of an empathetic understanding of one another, so we could try and figure out how it is that we aren't actually we they, but we're actually all
yes.
we. Yeah, and that's clear in our phone call conversations where people want to point at the immigrant stream as being the immense risk to the United States. It's such a risk that they think it's appropriate, possibly, to have an insurrection in the United States
yes.
to overthrow the government because of the risk from the outside. Well, wow, what sounds like a greater risk to America in that conversation? Is it an immigrant stream from Mexico that wants to come into our country and achieve greater opportunity? Is that a greater risk than a bunch of people in the United States who are talking about essentially overthrowing the government as we now know it, to create a different government that would be more restrictive and repressive on, for instance, immigration, but also on a lot of other things?
You know, Cindy, and not only talking about it, but a well-armed segment
yes.
of our population that threatens to use those arms.
Yeah, I mean... 20 million AR-15 type weapons in the hands of private citizens suggest to me that there is at least a subliminal threat that people will use that for something other than shooting a target 10,000 times in the backyard. I mean, I don't know quite how you do target practice with an AR-15, but it strikes me as an exercise that you wouldn't conduct very often.
Well, you know, an AR-15 can bring down a tree. Depending on the size of it, that's how powerful a thing that is. But in the end, Sandy.
Well, maybe that's what they're being purchased for. It's simply firewood.
Yeah. But none of this is, Sandy, is it's funny because, you know, the Proud Boy trial is going on right now. And one of the guys admitted, yeah, our plans were serious.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that everyone's got this sort of plausible deniability. Everyone is armed like this. The Proud Boys and others have a plausible deniability. Their plausibly deniable theory is they were bringing these weapons to Washington so they could defend the demonstration against the fear of harm. Right, so they were there to keep the peace.
Yeah, well,
that's a plausibly deniable theory about the fact that they brought the arms, maybe to for mischief.
It just gets to a point where, Sandy, people may say, "Hey, you guys talk about this stuff too much." you can never talk about these kinds of issues too much because they are a powder keg, right? I mean, we got to stop acting like this is not a powder keg. It's a powder keg.
Well, that's why I think the way to solve the powder keg is not to point at the people and say that they're outliers and dangerous and simply should be ignored or incarcerated or something, because that's really that tends to pour gasoline on the fire. What we need to do is figure out how to talk to one another and talk each other off the roof.
Well, if we can't get the Democrats and Republicans in Congress to do that, then you know, they should be probably more equipped to have that conversation than the average citizen.
Right.
And yet we can't get them to have that conversation. That's what's so frightening, Sandy. And so as goes the government, so goes the people.
Well, I think we've got to get to the point where some of these callers who live in the suburbs won't talk about being afraid to go into the inner city, you know, which is, if you looked at the facts, there's no risk, and by inner city, I mean into the city of Milwaukee.
Right.
We have people who say they won't go in the city of Milwaukee because it's dangerous. They don't think you're dangerous, Earl, but apparently they think the unknown black man on the street is such a danger to them, because otherwise it's hard to fabricate a theory of danger.
Got to go. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You could text us at that same number. You know, Sandy and I don't come in here on Mondays and Fridays to try to scare people, right? That's not what we're trying to do. You know, Sandy's well-informed man in about global politics and others, and so he knows, based on his education and energy and all of those things, he knows he specializes in those areas, and so he has a much more involved understanding of those policies and how all those things work. As a matter of fact, he's a specialist in that area. So, you know, it's why when I hear Sandy talk and ask him about those things, I'm listening intently. Because these things, he always says, they're complicated. Well, yeah, you know it is. You know, you and I think, hey, we need gas. Hey, man, listen, I need gas, and I need gas to be cheap. And I don't care about the rest of those things. Just make my gas cheap. Make sure it's there when I need it. And I don't understand why you can't get that done. That's what the average person thinks. You know, this is the United States of America, the most powerful nation on earth. There's enough oil in our own land. Let's get this done. And so, Sandy, you always explain the ins and outs of why it's not that easy.
Well, you know, oil comes out of the ground and it doesn't go directly through a pipeline into your automobile.
Number one, I don't think I can hear you. I don't think you're on right now.
Really?
Yeah. Just hang on for a second, and then we'll let you respond.
Maybe that's the way I ought to be. Yeah. Just turned off.
No. So
I was saying, well, oil doesn't just, I think a lot of people think simplistically that oil comes out of the ground, goes in a pipeline, goes from the pipeline into a truck directly, and from a truck to a gasoline station, and then into your tank. You know, it's easy. But that isn't the way it works. Oil comes out of the ground, goes in a pipeline, goes to a refinery. Anyone who's been to New Jersey knows what huge refineries look like.
You say Gary, Indiana.
Well, there's a big refinery in Indiana. There's only about, I don't know what, 30 refineries in the country, and they're very, very big installations. And they take oil and they frack it into all of its parts. You know, they create out of it the airplane fuel, diesel fuel, the byproducts that are used in plastic, all kinds of things. But the biggest volume of it is now currently, because of the demand for it, fracked into gasoline. gasoline. And so you need a refinery to create gasoline out of oil. And there's a capacity that the refineries have. And the current supply of gasoline in the United States is basically limited by the volume that can be refined by the refineries. And it would take the construction of additional refineries to increase the amount of oil, the amount of gasoline that's available in the marketplace materially above what is now. So, you know, in 2019, we reached a record level of oil output in the United States and gasoline. And we're back to that level essentially now. We can't get beyond this level that we're currently at without additional refining capacity, which requires billions of dollars of investment by oil companies. The investors in oil companies don't think that it's appropriate at this point for oil companies to make billion-dollar investments into the that extend for their return well into the future for additional refining capacity, because with the electrification of cars, everyone understands that the demand for gasoline is probably at a peak about now, and that the demand for gasoline is going to drop off materially, and that when that happens, these refineries will be creating excess capacity of gasoline. Anyone who knows anything about commodities knows that nothing drives the price of a commodity down faster than excess capacity.
So let's go to CJ, because I'm sure he'll agree with that. CJ from Stoughton, good morning. How you doing? You say what?
Well, thank you again for taking my call, Sandy and Earl, but nothing drives down investments in commodity of oil than the president attacking the industry on day one. Period.
Okay. Well, let me just say, CJ, that reflects not an understanding of how the industry works or what has happened. Whether he attacked the industry or not on day one is one thing. Whether there's a long term trend towards the CJ, listen. If there's a long term trend,
what investor would invest?
CJ, hold on one second. I just explained to you that Sandy is well educated and trained.
We can have a conversation. I don't need to talk about credentials, but the fact is that CJ, the investment in refining is done based on a long term view of the value of gasoline in the marketplace and the volume of gasoline that will be purchased in the long term. People who make those projections do not look at near-term politics or the words of near-term politicians to figure out whether they want to make that investment. An investment in a refinery is the investment in the volume of gasoline that will be demanded in the United States in 2026 and 2028 and 2030. And who knows who the president of the United States is going to be during those intervening years, but there are trends in the marketplace that dictate the evaluation of that. One of the major trends is the electrification of cars. And the electrification of cars will have a massive impact on the demand for gasoline going forward. So people can try to politicize anything they want. They can try to point at the words of somebody and try to claim that it is what is impacting something that's happening out there in the marketplace, but it isn't an accurate portrayal of it. You can try to connect the dots for your own political purposes of generating interest in a campaign, but the fact is that it doesn't relate. Those dots don't relate to the reality of the oil and gasoline marketplace.
CJ?
Twice as much right now. This president, on day one, you can make excuses for him, but what smart investor is going to want to invest in oil when this president and the Democratic Party threatens that they're going to take carbon out of, they're attacking carbon? That, you know, Gavin Newsom, he'll get reelected because there's no more conservatives in that state. They're leaving in groves. He won't let people even charge their electric cars. What a brilliant move.
CJ, I just think that this is just advice. You can take it or leave it. But I think that simplifying the world into good guys and bad guys is not a fruitful way to understand the world. It is a fruitful way to get up in the morning with indigestion and anger. And so I just would suggest to you that you try to look at the complications and not the simplifications.
You've got to go to a break. 844-967-20.